Chapter 29. Kip had been a very young man once. That young fool had died in the fires of his wife's wrath when he had tried to deny her something. Specifically, he'd tried to forbid her from coming along to fight. "You don't fight," he'd said. Quite sensibly, he thought.
"I don't want to fight."
That flash bomb of scintillating non sequitur had left him momentarily dazed. She'd thrown her things aboard the skimmer along with another woman Kip didn't recognize.
"But we're going in order to fight. We're going so that we can fight. We're going with the sole intention of fighting. Ergo, if one doesn't want to fight, where we, the mighty, are going is not where you, who are not the mighty, should go."
That seemed to set a kettle of rage boiling. So he kept talking. He'd been a young man.
"You see," he said, "if I were not going specifically to fight, I would probably choose some place safer to be than, you know, the middle of a battle. And since your place..."
"My place! My place!"
And a more rapid boil than Kip had expected. Here he'd kept his eye on the pot the whole time and everything.
"First things first, Lord Guile. I am too a part of the mighty. I'm one of you now, and don't you dare take that away from me. The mighty obey my orders. I'm there. You do not give orders to your wife. If they're in the mighty, I do."
He knew he shouldn't have said that. He'd said it. He'd been young. Things had gone downhill from there. Tysis had come along. With a healer. As a noblewoman, Tysis had already had a basic education in battlefield medicine, or, as it was otherwise known, how to stop your child's bleeding if no slaves are around to help. She'd agreed to stay with Evie Cairn, the healer. Kip counted it a win. He was no longer a young man. The skimmer cut up the broad river in the moist evening air. As they'd slowly gained elevation over the past days, the jungles had yielded to evergreen forests.
"Kip, you know, I can learn," she said. "Learn to what?" he asked. "To fight."
"Of course you can. And we'll brush up on your shooting and some basic attacks with Green, but you'll never be a match for any of these guys.
Even if you could, we don't have 10 years for you to train to get there. It doesn't make sense to even try."
Ben Haydad cleared his throat and said under his breath,
"I think you're missing the point, brother."
Kip charged ahead. Fucking fuck. This was so simple. It wasn't a matter of feelings, it was a matter of facts.
"Look, I've been training with the best for more than a year now. Every day we work for hours to learn how to fight this way. Every day! We've been in numerous battles, and I'm still the weakest of us. I'm still a liability to the mighty Tysis. So that's really not correct,"
Fekudi said.
"Fuck,"
Cruxa said. He was working one of the reeds.
"Sure, in a fist fight, any of us could take him," Fekudi went on. "But battle's not a fist fight. Breaker, you don't need to be modest. I don't think any of us would want to face you one-on-one on the field of battle."
"Or Holum's chapped nutsack, Fekudi," Big Leo said from the other reed. "You're not wrong, but your timing is..."
"My timing is what?" Fekudi asked.
"Wrong!"
"Oh, I thought you were leaving me hanging there, like you're not wrong, but your timing is..."
"Fuck,"
Cruxa said, in a tone of command that was a twin of Commander Ironfist's.
"Ah, right, sir."
"You see," Tysis said, "I need to do my part."
"I thought we'd already agreed what your part is,"
Kip said, starting to get hot again. Then Haydad cleared his throat again, looking blithely at the sky and trees.
"Missing the point," he whispered again.
"Fine,"
Kip said, too loudly, turning to the young man.
"What's the point, Ben?"
Ben Haydad abandoned his quiet tone, matching Kip's frustration with his own.
"She wants your respect, dumbass. You treat her like dead weight and it robs her of purpose. I understand how she feels."
He gestured to his knee. Ben Haydad did little stretches every day to reclaim what movement he could, but the kneecap had been shattered, and every move caused him terrible pain. He used one crutch most of the time and two when he had to move at any decent speed.
"But hell, add the cripple and the neophyte together and you might get one warrior between us."
Bitterness roiled beneath the surface of his words like cream first poured into kopi, awaiting a single slight stir to stain every part.
"We need two drafters on the reeds to keep the skimmer mobile if we have to retreat,"
Cruxa interjected.
"It's a necessary function.
Plus Ben-Hadad's a hell of a shot if it comes to it. Tisis, you stay with Ben.
Tisis swallowed and nodded. Okay.
That's yes, sir, Cruxer said with a little smirk. You're one of the mighty now.
Tisis lit up. Yes, sir, she said. And sorry for being a jackass, everyone.
Common malady round here, Big Leo muttered.
Farcudi stared over at him.
Universal malady? Big Leo asked.
Huh? Farcudi asked. I was just... You got a booger.
Big Leo trailed off into cursing Farcudi under his breath and trying to dig at his nostril discreetly while the others grinned.
Universal, Kip said. Definitely universal.
He turned to Cruxer with gratitude welling up in him. Sometimes you just needed a guy to step in and assert some authority. Cruxer was so good at that. Many in power liked to assert their dominance. Cruxer liked to let people figure things out for themselves, intervening only if there was a problem he could fix that they couldn't fix on their own. It was one of many traits that made him a good man to follow.
Thank you, Commander Cruxer.
Commander? Cruxer asked.
If we're going to do this, let's do it right, right?
Kip asked. Cruxer stood up straight, as if donning a new cloak and feeling the weight of it settle on his shoulder.
Commander Cruxer, he said. A big smile spread over his face.
Commander Cruxer, Winston said, nodding to him, not even a hint of sarcasm in his voice.
Commander Cruxer, Big Leo said in his basso profundo,
as if announcing him in a stadium. And on they went, each adding their own little twist.
Commander Cruxer? Farcudi asked.
Commander Cruxer, Ben-Hadad said.
Tisis fluttered her eyelashes and clasped her hands like a swooning girl.
Oh, Commander Cruxer!
He blushed, and they laughed together. Kip suddenly felt far, far away. After all they'd been through, and what he knew he was taking them into, it was a honeyed moment that they could be silly kids together. Like a spark flying upward, their youth was bright and fading fast.
It's time, Ben-Hadad said, abruptly professional. He'd made water clocks for them, complaining about it. He'd not had time to make their globes the correct size to correspond to hours or minutes. Instead, he'd merely made the two clocks exactly the same size, so although it took about 70 minutes for them to empty rather than an hour, they were still synchronized with each other, which was all that mattered. Kip drew his superviolet spectacles from his hip case, absorbed light, and shot a flare into the sky. It had taken them a while to figure out how to keep the flare from disintegrating immediately. Superviolet was so fragile. There was no answering flare they could see, but in the river valley, with trees draped over every shore, they hadn't expected to.
Quiet, from this point on, Cruxer ordered.
They went silent, leaving only the whopping noise and burble of the reeds as Luxin pushed water and trapped air into the water behind the boat. Kip saw Ben-Hadad looking annoyed at the noise. Already designing a quieter propulsion unit for Blue Falcon 3, no doubt. A few minutes later, they pulled the skimmer into the lee of a downed tree that would conceal it while letting the reeds remain in the water. They loaded the muskets and checked their other weapons. The Blood Foresters had shown them how to camouflage themselves for the woods, breaking up their silhouettes by binding twigs to their clothing, dulling the bright gleam of metal or Luxin and adding streaks to their black clothes, so they looked like shadows dappled with sun rather than man-shaped darknesses. Stealth was vital for the plan. If they were spotted before the attack at the warehouse pulled away the defenders, the whole ruse would be for naught. On the other hand, they still didn't even know if they were looking for barges or wagons, or even both. They didn't know how many defenders there would be. They were going in blind. Well, the element of surprise is no advantage if you're surprised too. But the longer they took to attack, the more ghosts were going to die below. So, quietly, as they double and triple-checked everything, Kip reviewed their rendezvous points if they got separated, the likely fallback areas if they had to retreat, and so forth. There were only the 7 of them, and Kip wished again that he had Goss, Delos, and Tyr along. Best not to think about any of them, though. Especially Tyr. Damn, but Tyr's clerk would have made scouting easy. Then they heard it, a single, distant musket shot.
Could still be a hunter, Cruxer said.
Who hunts with a musket? Winston asked, as if every archer in the world could reliably down a stag at 200 paces with a single arrow the way he could.
There was a rattle of another dozen shots.
Aha,
Big Leo said, breaking into a huge grin for the first time in several weeks.
That sounds like our song.
They put on their spectacles and filled themselves with their colours, Luxin curling like smoke under their skins. Kip got ready to lead them out, only to see a reproachful look in Ferkudi's eyes.
What?
He asked.
You know, I'm not as smart as you, Breaker, but sometimes you're just plain dumb.
What? He asked again.
The hell is wrong with you, Big Leo said. We're going into battle, vastly outnumbered. May all die. And you're not going to give your wife a kiss goodbye?
Oh, Kip said. Oh. They bickered, but in an overarching sense, Kip and Tysis were actually becoming friends, and for all that they tried to consummate their marriage any number of frustrating times, they hadn't really kissed much. The mighty think I'm being dumb because I'm leaving without patching up a fight, but I think I'm actually a lot dumber than that. He'd kissed her neck. She'd liked that a lot. He'd kissed her breasts. They'd both liked that a lot. But the last girl, the only girl he'd kissed on the lips, had been Tyr. Had he really never kissed Tysis on the lips? It was as if, without really realizing it, he'd been holding on to that for Tyr, holding back one intimacy because he'd given away so many others. To kiss Tysis, his wife, for Ahurim's sake, seemed to finally let the latch fall closed. The woman's voice says,
"You guile men, so intelligent with your brains and so cluelessly, hopelessly stupid with your hearts."
My cheek is stinging from Z's slap. Give the woman this. Even at 50, she's got arms and shoulders to make many young warriors jealous. I'm just glad she hit me with an open hand. She says, "Our houses and our nations need heirs to knit together the oaken shields and the guiles, else this war will never die. We've talked this all through. We've agreed on this course. We had our chance, Darien, all those years ago, and we missed it through our own pride. It's a closed door. Don't make us both pathetic by banging on it. You've married my daughter to give us an heir. None of us liked that choice, but we all made it. Now you act like a spoiled child, not willing to pay the price of your choice and making everyone else miserable with you. Darien, if you give my daughter a child but not your love, you're treating her like a whore, a broodmare, nothing more than a receptacle for your seed. She's my daughter, and I won't have you treat her like that. You will treat her like a lady, like your wife, like a woman making the best of a bad situation, like a woman offering you not just her body but also her heart. If you spurn that, you never deserved my love in the first place. But I love you, hopelessly, helplessly. The seeds of love may sprout where they will, but we choose whether to water them and give them light or to pluck them like weeds from the soil. We always have a choice. This choice seems impossible. Seems, she says, her back straight and eyes pitiless. And in the mirror of her eyes I see how callow, how selfish, how self-absorbed I've been. This marriage puts me in the arms of a young woman, willing to give me children and love. It puts Selene with an older man who loves her not, and breaks her relationship with her mother at the same time. It puts Z alone, with her daughter married to the man she herself loved. As a lover, how can she wish her daughter happiness with the man she herself once loved? As a mother, how can she not?
Is he having one of his fits? Ferkudi asked.
No,
Kip said, coming back to the moment. Just feeling ashamed for my stupidity. Darien Guile had been more than 50 years old, and he'd loved Z Oakenshield for more than 3 decades. When they'd finally made peace, she'd been too old to give him an heir, and he had no sons. He'd had to marry her daughter Selene. Darien had had an excuse for being an idiot. Kip had been in love with Tyr for a few months. Before that, he'd been infatuated with Liv Danavis. Before that, it had been Issa. Always, he'd panted after the safely impossible. He walked to Tysis and looked down into her questioning hazel eyes, her face more open than he deserved, more beautiful than he could imagine.
"Forgive me," he said. "Just this once," she said, smiling.
He cupped her face in his hands and kissed her gently on the lips. She reacted like red Luxin just waiting for a spark, her body moulded into his as if it'd been made for it. Her lips were... Big Leo cleared his throat noisily. Her lips were... Oh, Orholm, her lips were the best.
Hey, newlyweds.
You were the one who reminded him of impending death, Winston said.
Gathering rosebuds while you may and all that, Farcudi said. I mean, we do need to let the trap develop a bit. Maybe they have time for a quick throw behind those bushes over.
Breaker, Cruxer said.
Gather ye rosebuds, Farcudi, Ben-Hadad said, incredulous. You read poetry?
I'm a gentle soul, Farcudi protested.
And lo, they saw that the ape could speak, and they were much amazed,
Big Leo said under his breath.
And sore afraid, Tysis said, finally pushing Kip back.
It took him a moment to realize she was finishing the quote. He hadn't read either poem. Aside from Master Danavis's scrolls of military history and tactics and drafting, boy, did some things about the general seem obvious, in retrospect. There had been few books or scrolls in Recton, and fewer people willing to let a fat kid with pie-sticky fingers handle their treasures. His mother had kept books for years, despite her addiction. Finally, most of those had been sold to fund her haze, smoking, and self-loathing.
You don't look like a man who's just been thoroughly kissed, Tysis said.
Just putting on a good show for the boys, he said.
Come back, she said, and I'll put on a good show just for you.
Oh my. There was something cosmically wrong with being horny when you left your wife to go to battle. There were traditions to follow, damn it. There was supposed to be a night of passion first, then the husband left deeply satisfied, carrying a nice memory of what awaited when he returned. It was a nice incentive to live. Of course, unrelieved horniness with a promise of relief if he lived was a nice incentive too.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I would prefer the other incentive, sir,